Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and it's time for the final episode in our four-part Digital Life series with Peter Rojas, founder of GDGT, and Gizmodo. We've heard about Microsoft's cool factor last week, at least the one they're trying to bring back, the iPad, gadget overload, and free Wi-Fi for all. So in today's final segment, we're just going to open the phones. Peter's going to take your questions. There are so many of you over the week, so we didn't get to. So it's kind of an open phone session with Peter Rojas here on all things tech that you can't quite figure out, all things gadget and gizmo, and all things digital controversy, in case you want to weigh in on anything related to that. Need a new MP3 player? Not sure which printer is best? Have any burning questions about the world of tech news or tech life? 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. We've been collecting some on our website and on our Facebook page, and we'll start with some of those and then get to your calls. 212-433-9692. Open phones for Peter Rojas here for the next 15 minutes or so. Hey, Peter, thanks for doing this series all month. It's really been great.
Thanks. It's actually been the highlight of each week.
So here's one that came in on Facebook. Somebody asked, will the audio quality of my cell phone ever be even half as good as my landline? And if not, why not?
Yes. So the call quality will get better. One of the problems right now is that the audio kind of quality call standard goes to the lowest common denominator, which is actually this call quality of a landline. If you've ever made a phone call over the internet using Skype, for example, you've noticed that the call quality is actually much higher. And so with cell phones, you could actually have a cell phone to cell phone call which is of higher quality than you can get on a landline. And there are carriers in the UK that are experimenting with what they're calling sort of voice, like high-def voice calls. So you will eventually be able to get a higher quality. What will happen is right now cell phones operate on circuit switch for making voice calls and then packet switch for the data connections like email and things like that. Once it all moves over to packet switch to data, you can actually have much higher voice quality calls.
And here's another cell phone one that says, when will we be able to use our cell phones with any carrier, and when will we be able to add whatever software we want on it? I suspect the answer to that might be never, but there is a story out today about somebody who made an iPhone app that bypasses AT&T. Did you see that?
I didn't see that. I mean, there are ways that people have been able to unlock the iPhone, for example, and use it on other carriers besides AT&T here in the U.S. One of the issues is that the carriers use different standards. So Verizon and Sprint use a standard called CDMA, and AT&T and T-Mobile use a standard called GSM. And those, if a phone designed for each carrier is incompatible with the other. So if you have a Verizon phone, it won't, even if you unlock it, take off all the restrictions, it won't work with AT&T. What's happening with the next generation of wireless called 4G, Verizon and AT&T, for example, are converging on the same standard. So it's going to shuffle the deck a little bit. So you will have phones that will be able to be used on more carriers than you did before, but then Sprint is going with a different standard than Verizon and AT&T, so we'll have that same sort of bifurcation that we had.
This iPhone app is called Line 2, and it is supposed to take you off the AT&T network and onto something else that does some things that AT&T can't. Michael in Williamsburg, you're on WNYC with Peter Rojas. Hello.
Hi. Well, I have a question for you guys about what is regarded as the most secure way of backing up digital information, and specifically whether or not you guys could suggest a way of remotely backing up digital information.
And in fact, we have a great question to this effect on Facebook, too, from one of our listeners. Listen to this, Peter and Michael. It says, storage of digital materials. Floppies are historical jokes. Zip disks, a thing of the past. Same with SciQuest, etc. How long will our CDs and DVDs last? And will our external hard drives last long enough to be translated onto the next form of backup? It's a time killer. So what do you say to both of these listeners?
Yeah, so this is actually a really big issue. And the problem we used to have was we never had enough storage, right? We could never afford enough megabytes or gigabytes or terabytes to store all of our stuff. Now, actually, you can buy a pretty large external hard drive to back up all your stuff. And most people have trouble filling up their hard drives now. They don't have enough music or video files or digital photos.
250 gigs and more.
Yeah, I mean, so that's not necessarily the issue anymore. The issue is, how do you have the time to back it up? How do you make sure that's backed up securely? And how do you make sure that the backups don't degrade or get destroyed somehow? One of the things that I recommend is that people get It's called a network-detached storage drive. You connect it to the router in your home. It can be a little complicated to set up, but there are companies that are making it easier and easier. And what those use is called a RAID array, and they have actually multiple hard drives inside the box. So the one I have has four hard drives, and it creates redundancy so that if one of the hard drives crashes or fails, you actually have a backup across all the other drives. So you pop the broken drive out, pop in a new one, and you have no data loss. Now, if you want to back up remotely, there are actually services that do that. The problem is most people have an internet connection at home that is too slow to be able to update, to be able to upload the gigabytes or even terabytes of data. It might take them weeks or months to back up all their data, and that's a very serious issue.
What about flash drives for that? Are they a good long-term storage device?
Flash drives can be. They're usually pretty stable, and a lot of them actually you can buy waterproof ones or shockproof ones, and flash memory is much more damage resistant than a hard drive. When hard drive is, you know, can shatter or break because you basically have a spinning glass platter.
So one of your sites is Gizmodo, and
that's one of the older sites that I started.
You started, and it's more about news in the tech world. And I noticed that the top story there right now is that the three major browsers, Firefox, Internet Explorer, and Safari, were all hacked simultaneously by one person yesterday. And okay, that's scary, but then we learned the person was part of a conference. Would that be a conference of hackers? Do you know that story?
Well, they're security experts, and what they do is they have these sort of competitions to find vulnerabilities in browsers. And to be honest, you'd rather that it be somebody as part of the industry, a security consultant or a security expert, trying to find and discover these vulnerabilities rather than a hacker, because the security expert's going to go find them, and they're going to publish them and let the people who make the browsers or whatever software they're trying to crack improve it and plug the hole. What you don't want is a situation where hackers discover something and they keep it to themselves for weeks or months. And that does sometimes happen.
So there are these white hat hackers out
there. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there's a sort of a popular conception that all hackers are bad or trying to steal your credit card number. But that's not true. Most hackers that I know are actually, they're interested in sort of the challenge of uncovering these problems and issues. But when they do discover them, they like to share them and get them fixed.
I think some of these folks go under the name of the Pwn to Own crew. Is that right?
I think some of them, yes.
PWN number two, OWN, Pwn to Own. So
there's a whole like hacker lingo.
Hisham on Staten Island. You're on WNYC with Peter Rojas. Hello.
Hello, Ben. Thank you. My question is, do the smartphones of today, for example, the iPhone and the Droid, are sufficient for the person on the road all the time, or it is better to have a talk and text phone with one of these new netbooks?
That's actually a good question. It's one of the things that a lot of people are kind of trying to figure out is, can you travel without a laptop at all now? Can you get by with just your smartphone? And I think we're not quite there yet, but I find if I'm just going to go away for a day, that sometimes I can get by with just my phone. But when I need to sit down and write lengthy emails or do some real work, that I really like having the full-size keyboard of a laptop or even a larger netbook. We're not there quite yet, but I think we will be eventually.
Hisham, good luck. Here is Margaret in Allentown. Margaret, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I have sort of a simple question, but I like to burn CDs, and I was wondering how you get the names of the tracks to, I guess, stick or transfer when you upload it onto another computer or when you're playing the CD in a car.
Well, so what you have to do is you have to not burn a data CD, you have to actually, or a data disk, you have to actually burn a music disk, and you have to make sure that the tracks are tagged properly in whatever software you're using to burn the CD.
Tagged properly, okay.
Yeah.
But while you're driving, Margaret, don't look at those names of the songs displaying on the screen.
Have someone read them for you.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much. Maybe they need another audio track that says, you know, you are listening too.
Well, and actually there are some players out there who will read the name of the track out for you.
DJ in Brookfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, DJ.
Hey, two questions. Interested to see what your guest thinks about the privacy issues with tagging in videos and photos. Europe is now launching an investigation about the privacy issues when people are not on those particular services in Twitter and Facebook. MySpace, and they get tagged in a photo, and potentially with, you know, it's like, okay, they got tagged, their email information is out, their phone information, whatever. So it'd be interesting to get your take on that. And the second question is, you kind of touch it a little bit with the smartphones, particularly with the Android. I am a Verizon user, and I'm waiting for the Nexus One to make its way over with both CDMA and GSM. Any thoughts on that?
All right, and we have another caller waiting to ask, when will the Verizon iPhone drop?
Okay, well, to talk about the Nexus One, I'm not sure that the Verizon version of the Nexus One is coming pretty soon. I actually use the GSM version of the Nexus One on T-Mobile. But I don't know. I actually don't think it's going to have both CDMA and GSM. I think it's going to be just CDMA only.
And what about his privacy issue with photo tags?
So this is actually a big issue. If you've ever used Facebook and you've had somebody that you a friend of yours tag you in a photo, and then you go and look at the photo and you're like, I don't want to be tagged in that photo. I don't want everyone to know that I'm part of this photo. It is an issue, and Facebook does give you the option to sort of remove the tag that has been made.
What are the consequences of being tagged that people don't want? I mean, you're in the photo. Well, it's a photo that presumably you stood for in some way.
Yeah, I mean, it's a gray area, right? Because if you can, you know, on some level, like if you don't want your photo taken, you should just not have your photo taken. But sometimes people go out with their friends and they're out partying and they have their photo taken, and it's not a photo that they would post to their profile themselves. But the tagging attaches it to their profile so that other people can see it. So maybe their work friends or their boss. And so if you want to keep those two halves of your life separate, it's one way, sort of preventing people from tagging is one way to do that.
Right. The nude chugging photo, for example.
Yes. You know, it's one of those things where I think that we're going to start to see a lot of people figuring out and managing how they kind of distinguish between the public version of themselves and the private version of themselves.
Was that you, by the way, in this 1993 photo? Where did you go to college? No, never mind. Art in Verona. You're on WNYC. Hi, Art.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
My first time calling you guys. I'm interested in getting HDTV, but I'm interested now in getting the 3D with 3D sound. Can you tell me what's new, what I should know, and where I should look?
And is now the time to buy 3D TV at all, in your opinion, Peter?
Yes, sir.
So I actually would not buy a 3D TV right now. I think you'll pay a premium for them. There are a couple manufacturers that have introduced them here in the U.S. I think Samsung and Panasonic have started selling them, and maybe a couple of others. But the problem is you're going to pay extra for them. You're going to pay more than you would pay for a comparable regular TV. And there isn't a lot of content out there yet. There are a few satellite and cable channels that will offer programming in 3D. Sony is going to offer 3D Blu-ray discs in a few months. And there might be some 3D gaming for PlayStation and some of the other consoles. But there won't be a lot out there. And I think if you wait 6 months or a year, if you can, you'll actually pay a lot less. And eventually we'll reach a point where there won't be much of a differential in price between a regular HDTV and a 3D HDTV.
Good luck, Art. Ellie in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ellie. Is that Ellie?
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air. Who are you?
Okay, this is Ellie in Brooklyn.
Hi, Ellie. Go ahead. We have about a minute left.
I have a Sony DVD, a video player, goes on a DVR-Ws, and I never figured out how to transfer it onto the computer or to do it onto another disc or to put it on some other device. Where could I go to find that out?
Where could you go to find out information about how to
do the transfer?
So he can get, so he can get rid of the old player, right?
No, I still use it's not a player, it's a recorder, it's a uh-huh. video camera.
It's a video camera.
It's a camcorder. Okay.
So you're recording to it uses the like the mini DVDs?
Yeah, yeah.
And you can't figure out how to get the DVDs just copy the DVDs onto a computer?
Yes.
Well, there should be an application that Sony offers that'll help you transfer those files over.
I think that's going to be too complicated to actually remaining time.
I would recommend Googling for the name of the camera and then transfer, you know, and then the words name of the camera, transfer, and DVD.
Ellie, thanks for your call. And we're just about out of time. Peter Rojas, who's a founder of Engadget and Gizmodo and now GDGT.com. Just think gadget without the vowels, GDGT.com. In 20 seconds, what are you in this for? What makes this a great thing for you, what you do? What makes it satisfying?
I just love how technology is changing the way that we live our lives. And it's all these new tools which let us do new things. And I'm really fascinated from a purely sort of a sociological standpoint, I mean, really how it's changing literally the way that we interact and work and play and engage with one another.
So We will talk again, I am sure, when things come down the pike. This has been really fun, and listeners have really appreciated it. And, of course, they can see your stuff on your site or go back and listen to the previous segments here. Peter Rojas from GDGT.com, thank you so much.
Thanks.
It's been great. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.